Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
Hi, I'm Megan Rinks.
And I'm Melissa D. Montz.
And like every other person with access to a microphone, we started a podcast.
On Mondays, we release Don't Blame Me, which is an advice podcast where listeners call in and we share our thoughts on situations such as what to do if you're going to your boyfriend's family function and you haven't told him that you previously slept with both his twin brothers.
Then on Thursdays, we release our podcast, But Am I Wrong?, where we ethically gossip about pop culture, politics, our lives, and your lives. Listeners write in and we tell them if they're wrong or right in a situation. Are you the hero or the villain?
On Tuesdays and Fridays, we throw in a little something extra as well.
A little something, something. We strive to create a community grounded in activism, mental health, and inclusivity. Think of us as like your blunt, honest friends who give you advice that you need to hear, not what you want to hear. But we're also always rooting for your success. What we lack in credentials, we make up for in
opinions.
We do that in every episode too.
We're professional, unprofessional. So if you're looking for a new slate of podcasts to add to your routine, we're here for you.
Acast recommends.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.
Hello, my name's Jess Phillips, and this is Yours Sincerely. I've always been a prolific letter writer, both the good and bad kind, and know the power of putting words to paper. So in this podcast, I want to give my guests a chance to celebrate three people that mean the world to them. Someone they love, someone who's no longer around, and someone who doesn't realise how significant a role they've played in their lives. And when we've heard more about each person, they'll reveal how they would sign off each letter. Fraser Clark is a professional boxer who won a bronze medal at the 2020 Tokyo Olympics. He's competed in super heavyweight championships around the world and won gold at the 2018 Commonwealth Games. Today, I'm excited to talk to him about the letters he would send to three people who mean the world to him. So, hello, Fraser. How are you?
I'm good, really good. Just finished training, so I'm still sweaty, but I'm all good.
I had all the good intentions of doing some exercise when I got in from work before starting doing this today, but I totally failed. But I'm sure I'll do some, I don't know, some burpees later. I don't think I could. I mean, I sometimes have to do like that where you pretend to throw punches. You know, that fake.
Boxer size.
And honestly, I'm so pathetic. It is just pathetic.
No, don't say that. Even if you can get like 15 minutes in, you know, a little circuit going, some burpees, some high knees.
Today I had punches. I was meant to do some burpees in my circuit, but I've not done it yet today, but I will.
Get it done. You'll feel better after.
You always do feel better.
Exactly.
That is so true. Now, Fraser, are you called Fraser because of famous boxers called Fraser?
That's what I do tell everyone, but a little inside secret, an exclusive, is I was actually named after someone, apparently, that used to be in Emmerdale called Fraser. This is like,
I remember that person from, it was when Emmerdale used to be called Emmerdale Farm. And my nan used to watch it, and there was a character called Fraser in it. So that, you're not named after Joe Fraser?
It depends who's asking.
That is absolute, why were you named after the character from Emmerdale?
I don't have a clue.
Was your mum a big Emmerdale fan?
Apparently so at the time, yeah, apparently so. 1991, he was big in Emmerdale.
He was a big character in Emmerdale. You're the only person on, God's Earth that I've ever met that's been named after an Emmerdale character. There was another character called Seth, who was like one of the main characters. Maybe some people have been called Seth after Seth from Emmerdale Farm. That is absolutely brilliant. So this is all about letter writing and people that we love. Now, because you are of a certain age, you just told me that you were born in 1991, where I was 10 in 1991, watching Emmerdale Farm with my nan. I imagine that you don't write letters at all and haven't really had that much experience of writing letters, because young people, and I'm putting you in this category now, young people don't tend to have a hinterland in writing letters. Have you written many letters?
Do you know what? I think when I was younger, so my grandmother, she lived in Jamaica, and that was the only letter that I'd write. And, that's, you know, that was that was, we're talking years ago now, because then obviously technology got better and more improved, and then we started obviously phone calls and whatnot. So
did you have to do it on the lovely paper, the airmail paper?
Yeah. It was a long time ago. I was only a kid, and I was probably talking like when I, before like 8, 9, 10 sort of age.
Yeah, so you wrote letters to your granny in Jamaica.
Yeah.
But otherwise, you don't have any great love letters or letters that... No. Have you got any letters saying that you, like, qualified for, like, games and things?
Yeah, I keep all them, but obviously they're all... Even now, it's a little bit sad sometimes, because you get them emailed to you now, which isn't... It just doesn't... I've got all mine printed off and framed up, actually, to be fair, because...
Oh, there you go. So letters do matter. So, like, when you qualified.
Oh, yeah. And I got a letter from 10 Downing Street after the Olympics. That was big for me. I've got that framed up.
Was it Boris Johnson sent you a letter?
Yeah, basically, yeah. I got a letter saying that I qualified for the Olympic Games, that I went to the Olympic Games, Commonwealth Games, World Championships. You know, they're quite important, you know, like...
Oh, it's massively important.
One of my dreams was always to have a... when I couldn't afford my own house, was to have a room dedicated to boxing and just have a few of my achievements in there. So, yeah, it's good for that.
Yeah, competing in the Olympic Games, it's literally the greatest achievement. I remember when they announced that London was getting the 2012 Olympics, and I remember it was like sort of like 6 years before it happened. So it was like, you know, sort of 2005 time. And I remember being like, I've got to get good at something so that I can compete. And I just thought, oh, you know, I've just had a baby. I'm certain that I could probably get really good at archery or something. And obviously, this is a ridiculous thing to think, but like, it's the absolute pinnacle of the Olympic Games. Like, it's so impressive. I actually can't think of anything that I think is a greater achievement than competing for your country at the Olympic Games. It's like mega. You must have been like, when you qualified, you must have been like, just unbelievable.
I think qualifying was probably the best feeling out of the whole Olympic journey. I feel like qualifying was the time that I got the most emotional, was the best feeling. Even obviously standing on the podium was great, but I was getting a bronze medal. So it like sort of, it's hard. When you're a competitor, unless you're on the top, it's still a proud moment, but it's difficult. But actually qualifying, because it was the biggest weight off my shoulders you can ever imagine.
When you say that, like, this is the difference between sports people and us regular folks who could only like aspire to ever. There is that sort of competitive streak. I'm very competitive in other areas, but I remember watching Wimbledon with my husband once, and like the woman was like two sets, like, you know, she was like basically being absolutely hammered, and there was no way she was going to win. And I just said, look, if I was this woman now, I'd just throw in the towel. Like, I'd just be like, look, it's obvious I'm not going to win. And my husband was like, that is why you are not a high-level sports person. Because they don't throw in the towel. You don't throw in the towel. The presence of mind that sports people have to keep going against the odds, for regular people, it's impossible to understand.
Yeah, it definitely is. Definitely.
I mean, how do you just have to talk to yourself in your head? Do you like talk to yourself like a lunatic all the time?
I think myself and a lot of other sporting people, even though we come across quite well, we probably are lunatics. I mean, I'd go as far as to say I'm a lunatic 100%. Yeah, accepting defeat for me is a sickening thing. You know, like if you're a person that can accept defeat and just be happy losing or just be content in losing, then you can't really be around me, because I just can't fathom you as a person.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
I mean, it's difficult. It's a different wiring system. I mean, I don't like to fathom losing in my profession, although I'm from the Labour Party, so I'm used to it. but like I don't like it in that sphere, but people are just wired differently. Like, I just think, oh, you know, I just don't know how you keep going, like, especially boxing. It's brutal.
I think in boxing, obviously being a boy, being a boisterous young lad as well, and growing up, I don't know how to put this, but it's more of a thrill as well. You know, like, I don't condone fighting in any way, shape, or form. I love boxing, but it's that competitive edge of being a young man or a man and having an altercation, but it's perfectly legal, and I'm getting paid to do it. It's like it's a dream for any hyperactive kid, you know, that likes getting into fights. So
I mean, what you've just described is politics for somebody who likes to have a rap. I mean, I'm paid to have a rap. And I literally, sometimes I pinch myself. I think, oh my God, I'm being paid to sit and have a row with someone I don't agree with. How did I get so lucky that, like, I love to have a row. I love a row. Yeah, so it's a similar thing, I imagine. Although I've got to say, I don't have to train quite so hard. So I asked you to think of three different people you would want to send a letter to. And the first one would be the person who means the world to you. So who would that be?
Well, I know you asked me these questions in, like, they told me a few weeks ago that about these questions. And I sort of didn't want to think about them until this exact moment, because there are so many people that I could, like, whoever I say now, there's going to be people that I'm missing out, you know, because I'm only choosing three. So it's just...
I don't assume it means you hate them.
Yeah, of course. Yeah, no. So
the person who means the world to you, or a person, let's say, a person who means the world to you.
I think I'm going to go with my girlfriend.
Oh, good choice, Fraser. People very rarely pick their life partners, you know, actually.
No, because I could have gone my mom or my nan easily, but I think, you know, especially in the job that I'm in, it's not just me that has to go through it. Like, we have to go through it as a family. It's difficult.
What's her name? So,
her name's Danny Lee.
Danny Lee. And how long have you been together?
3 years.
3 years. So she was there for the whole sort of Tokyo nightmare journey that it turned into. Yeah.
I don't know how she did it.
I cannot. I mean, it's hard enough. My family are conscripts to my life. Like, they don't choose it, and they have to put up with it. But what happened around the Tokyo Olympics, it's going to forever be the greatest quiz question, because the Tokyo 2020 Olympics happened in 2021. Yeah. I found it really irritating whilst watching it on the television that it said 2020, but I get it. Was she able to come with you to Tokyo?
No, this is, like, you know, another, like, part of the story. So my son was due the day of leaving to Tokyo. Yeah, so...
I'm glad you picked her. She deserves it.
And luckily he came, I think he come like 2 weeks early. So I literally got, but I still, even though he did, I didn't get to spend much time with them or him, because I was in deep preparation. And, you know, I don't think she believed me, or I don't think anyone would believe me if they said, like, literally, like, nothing changes for me. And I know that might sound barbaric to people. Once again, like, my partner's just had a baby, a newborn baby, my first son, you know, my second child, but my first son. People to think, you know, you're going to be there. And it's not that I didn't want to be there, but I put so much into the boxing journey and the Olympic journey. I was so focused, and it was a selfish, it was a weird one, because it's selfish in a way, but in my profession, I have no choice but to be selfish. So a lot of people couldn't get their head around it, but I wanted something so badly. I was willing to do anything, and if it meant only seeing my partner and my son for a matter of hours after he was born, it's just the way it had to be.
Yeah, but, I mean, look, right, I mean, obviously, I'm a feminist and a modern woman, and I have a very, very active, and, I mean, he does much more than me, my husband, with our kids. But the sort of tradition of a man in the olden days being the breadwinner and being dedicated to having a career and things, those days are long gone now, I'm pleased to say. But the reality of your life is that you don't get to pick the times. You don't get to pick when... I mean, actually, if it hadn't have been for COVID, you'd have been there, wouldn't you? Exactly. I mean, because it was a year after it should have been, and all of that. Babies don't give you much notice of when they're going to arrive or fit into your life particularly successfully, in my experience. But there's no way you could have made that be any different. And I'm sure she didn't expect you to either.
No, she, you know, it was like I say, this, we're only human, and it was difficult for her, but she had really good help from, you know, her family. And it sort of worked out okay, because, you know, I'd probably say Trent being born and seeing the bond he had with his mum and my other daughter, Mila, was probably what got me over the line at the Olympics. You know, when times got hard, you know, that there was, you know, the thought of them three in my mind really, you know, drove me on and got me over the line.
The thing is that I think that most people hearing that story, immediately your sympathy goes to your girlfriend. You know, essentially, it's like, oh, you know, great, she's looking after kids on her own while you're off doing your career. Like, the sympathy. I actually, personally, I think it would be harder for you, like, two weeks after having a new baby, to leave your family to go
for 6 weeks.
For 6 weeks to live in a clinical environment where you are on your own with your thoughts. Like, you know, if I had to pick which one of you I would be leaving my newborn baby, I would pick to be your wife in this situation. I would pick to be her, because I would, you know, it must have been torture, and you must have felt really guilty. At the same time as knowing you're doing the right thing, as a parent, it doesn't stop you feeling guilty. Knowing you're doing the right thing, I live away from my children half of the week, and I know it's the right thing, and it means that they have a safe and secure life and all of that. But it doesn't stop me feeling guilty. I feel guilty about it.
Yeah, I think, you know, even without the birth of Trent, it would have been a torture anyway. You know, being away from Mila and Danny and my family, but then just knowing Trent was here and he was so young, and he's, you know, very, very critical age, you know, like the first few weeks of his life, it's so, like, important. And knowing how difficult it was as well. So it was difficult and it was torture, but the only guilt I felt was because I'll never change saying I had the time of my life in Tokyo, the best experience of my life, and it will never, ever be top. There's no question about it. So it was difficult to have the time of your life but not be with the people you love. That was the hardest thing. Well, if COVID wasn't around, you know, they would have been there and would have done it all together, do you know?
So. Yeah. Although I have to say, I'm not sure I'd fancy. Yeah, if COVID hadn't been that yet, then it would have been a year earlier, I suppose. But I'm not sure how much I'd fancy getting on. I mean, I took my firstborn son to a wedding 2 weeks after he was born, and I thought like I was losing my mind. So travelling to Tokyo to go to the Olympics might have been a big stretch. But when he's older, he's just going to think how cool it is. He's not going to know, is he?
He'll know.
He's not going to be bothered that you went to the Tokyo Olympics. He's going to be proud.
Just be dad, won't
he? Yeah. Is it? Are you competing at the Commonwealth Games in Birmingham?
No. I've turned professional now, so I can't compete in the Commonwealth. So I'll be supporting the team though, because they're my teammates for life, so I'll be supporting them.
Oh, brilliant. But now, presumably, your family can all come along to things with you and do things with you, and so it's not so bad. So, I mean, she must be pretty impressive then, as a conscript to your life, sort of putting up with all the training and all the... I bet you have to eat weird food, don't you?
It's like, I think it's more... You never get used to it, because I'm not the only one that has to sacrifice. She has to miss out on things. You know, there's certain places I can't go, won't go. Monday to Friday, I'm away. I'm in my hotel room now. It's not the most pleasant of places. She's at home with a one-year-old plus my daughter, you know, a few days a week. It's not a nice place to be at times, you know, and she's running her own business as well.
She sounds impressive.
Yeah, it's like, you know, you can only, like, you know, applaud and take your heart off, because I'm not sure I could do it.
No, I have to say, as the person who leaves my children with somebody else for the week, for their dad, people always, you know, like, oh, it must be really hard for you to be away. And I just think I'd rather do the bit I do. I don't know how he copes. Two teenage boys who fight all the time, constantly. I think I've definitely got the better deal in some of this, because I'm not the one always there. So how would you sign off a letter to Danny Lee? What would you want to say to her?
Thank you for bringing Trent into the world and accepting Mila as your own. Thank you for the support and being my, like, right hand. thank you for putting up with me and being you.
I think that's all we could ever thank our partners for, is thank you for putting up with me. I mean, she sounds like a pretty impressive woman. So the second person I asked you to think about was a person who's no longer with us. So who would that be?
You know, once again, there's a lot of people who I could dedicate this to, you know, because I've lost a few people. But I think I'd probably have to say my uncle Paul, my uncle Panny. He wasn't my uncle by blood. He wasn't even my uncle by marriage. But, you know, my auntie never married him. But growing up, he was as much as an uncle to me as my blood uncles. And, you know, I love it.
I'm from a working class community that makes you call your next door neighbour uncle. So, I've got a million uncles who are literally of no relation to me. So, who are often more uncle-y than some of my own actual uncles. So, I get it. So, did he help you with your boxing and things? Did he believe in you? Not even.
The only thing I can really say is, I always had a smile on my face when I was around him. You know, like, I can remember he's one of the first people to introduce me to beer. So I have to thank him for that. it was always slipped me a cheeky kind of call in. He used to do a thing to me. He taught me my first headlock. It was called the death lock. The arm comes around the neck and the other one pushes on the back of the head. And more than that, you know, he made my auntie really happy. He always made my auntie really happy. And, you know, and I know she misses him, and I miss him, and we all miss him. And my family and his family, you know, we're all very close. And I just miss my Uncle Panny. And I just wish he was here to see my success, because he knew I boxed. And he liked the fact I boxed, but he never got to see any of it, really. You know, I think he might have been at my first fight, maybe. But you know, it's quite a while ago now, a long time ago, like, so my memory's not that great of it. I think he was there, but he never got to see the success, and he would have been so proud. He would have loved the fact that I boxed at the Commonwealth Games, I won the gold medal, the Olympics, and won a bronze. I've turned professional. He would have been proud, you know.
I've got to say, for your family, as the mother of sons, I can't bear it when they're up too high on a chair. Like, how do your family watch you boxing? I would not be able to watch it. It would be intolerable for me. I don't like it when they stand too close to a ledge. Let alone watching someone I've been punching seven shades of shite out of them. I'd lose my mind.
I think it's difficult for my mum, my nan, and my partner at times, but Danny, but she's from sort of, her family's from a boxing background. Her little brother fights, her dad trains, so she's been around it a little bit more. I don't know how to do it. I mean, I think my mum just watches sort of on and off, like, you know, like sort of a peekaboo style. But they, you know, they support me, and they know I can look after myself. You know, over the years, they've seen me in some bad ways. They've seen me bloody noses, broken bones, operations, and hospitalised. This is, you know, my mum came and see me on a hospital bed after I'd been stabbed. So she's just had to, like, really thicken up the skin and get a sort of, you know that I'm a young man, boisterous, and, you know, this is fighting.
What happened?
Oh yeah, it's like 2016. I was involved in a bit of an incident. I got stabbed three times, and my mum and dad had to come in, you know, like, sort of, there was at the side of my bed, and it's just not good times, you know.
Your poor bloody mother is all I'm going to say.
I know.
Your poor mum and dad, my God, I'd be beside myself. Yeah. Have they ever, anyone in your family ever asked you not to do it, to stop, that they don't want you to do it anymore?
No, I think they know it's my identity, it's who I am, it's not what I do, it's just who I am. They could never ask me to stop. It's more than what I do. If you think of the name Fraser Clark, boxing's the next thing you think of, you know, and I wouldn't have it any other way.
Yeah. So but your uncle Paul, he never got to say.
He never got to see the success. I think he can remember me training and stuff, and, you know, poor Panny, like, he was just, I think he was always a bit. Well, he still is. It was a good moment. I can remember one of the running routes when I was a kid. I used to run past the graveyard of it after he passed away, and I'd always run in. It was a good excuse to have a 5 minute breather, but I'd always have 2 minutes next to the grave, you know. And still to this day, every time I drive by, I give him a beep. I go and give him a beer at Christmas. And yeah, he'd have just been proud of thinking, you know, I think it would have been nice for him, nice for my auntie and him. They would have probably got to one of the shows. It would have been beautiful, you know.
And why do you call him Panny? Is that, where does that come from?
Just a nickname. Where I'm from, you know, I'm from a small place, Burton-on-Trent, and it's the home of
beer.
The home of beer. It's the brewing town. So, you know, he was very much involved in the pubs. He liked his golf. He played darts. He drank a lot of pints and that. And I just remember it was bubbly, larger than life, with a big smile. And yeah, and a nice gold chain. Always had a good gold chain.
He sounds like a character.
Oh, he's a legend.
You know, I don't know whether you believe that people can see you or not, but I don't actually. I don't personally, but that. I hope I'm wrong. I hope that people can see you from wherever they are, or just know that you're happy and successful. I just feel like it'd be nice to think, it's no harm to anyone to think that he can see you and be celebrating you and would be proud. I'm certain.
I hope so.
I'm certain. So how would you sign off a letter to him? What do you want to say?
I'd just say to him, I miss you. And I've perfected the death hold. I can now afford to buy you a golf club that I broke when I was younger. You lent it me, and I tried to stick the head back on. I wish you was here, and we'd go for a beer or a 10. And I just hope I've made you proud.
Ever yearned for the perfect pub to reveal itself from some unexpected alley? Well, The Moon Underwater is the podcast for you. Join me, John Robbins, and the lovely Robin Allender.
Hi.
As we help a special guest create their dream pub. From the drinks behind the bar to the music on the jukebox, The Moon Underwater is whatever you want it to be. So, if you would like to join us in Desire's beating heart, search The Moon Underwater. Or maybe The Moon Underwater will search for you.
Here's a question for the marketers listening. Want to find that perfect customer beyond the world of scrolling, swiping, and searching? Here's a secret to make sparks fly. Smooth talking with podcast ads. With Acast, you can reach millions of listeners who'll be hanging on your every word. On the train to work, in the gym, or waiting in line for coffee. Start up the conversation with podcast listeners anywhere and everywhere. And they're looking for love. 60% of listeners have a higher trust in brands they've met on podcasts compared to social. Get closer to your audience. Make podcast ads with Acast. Head to go.acast.com/closer to get started.
Talking about drinking beer, do you have to live by like a ridiculous regime of fitness? I met the runner Katarina Johnson Thompson, and she was telling me about like what she can and can't eat and things, and all that stuff about people coming and checking your weight when you're in the Olympics and any moment someone can watch you go to the toilet and all that. I it was fascinating for me to hear all that, but like she lived by such like restrictive means. I mean again it's how people are wired differently, but presumably you it's slightly easier for people like yourself.
I mean, The person I grew up, I'm never going to change. You know, I grew up in a town where people have a beer before they drink milk. You know, it's like, it's sort of part of the culture, and I'm always going to be that person. But I think as age has gone on, you know, if I have to stop drinking for a year or 2 years, it can be done. 6 months, no problem. You know, it definitely doesn't aid what I do, but I'm very limited at it now. You know, it's very rare, but, listen, this is who I am, and I can't ever change it for love or money. My mum drinks beer, my dad drinks beer, my family drink beer. They live in the local pub, so you know, if I have to have a pint from time to time, you know, so be it.
Do you eat a lot of Marmite? Doesn't that come from Burton as well? Burton,
yeah, I'm not a fan, to be fair.
Oh, what? It's your heritage.
I wasn't a fan. I'm just thought. I think, you know, they say as you get older, you taste buds change and stuff. So I had something the other day, just it was there, you know, on the breakfast buffet. I thought, let me try a bit. I actually like it, and I think it nearly made my hair grow back.
Well, it's from where you're from. It's like me and really? Cadbury's chocolate. Like, you have to like it. It's my heritage to like Cadbury's chocolate, so I have to like it. So the final person I asked you to think about was somebody who doesn't know that what an effect they've had on your life. And so who would that person be?
Once again, you know, there's so many people I can missing out here, like my mum, my dad, my grandma, my granddad, my brother, my sister. There's so many people I'm missing out on, but I'm going to go for someone who's outside the family this time. I'm going to go for my first boxing trainer, Richard Joyce, mentor, friend, and the first person I wanted to speak to after I won the Olympic medal, the first person I wanted to speak to when I signed my professional contract, just one of the best men with the biggest heart and, you know, I've ever met, and he's done so much for me. You'll never know how much I appreciate him, his family, unconditional love for them, you know, and forever, you know, he's always my coach, always.
Now, the way that, I mean, I'm now going to give a Hollywood version of what I understand boxing coaches to be. Also, in my constituency, there are about 4 or 5 different boxing gyms. It's less to do with the boxing coaching that they're doing and much more to do with, like, helping the local kids to learn discipline and, like, you know, they're often facing closure and things. And they come in and see me and they're like, oh God, you know, and I try and help them get funding and things, because it's not about the fighting. It's always about that. I've got one of the women who runs one of them describes that, like, them as her kids. Like, you know, they're my kids. Like, you can't let the gym close, sort of thing. And in Hollywood, it's always been presented as, you know, like, your boxing coach is a person who, like, you know, drags you back from the bad to be good again. So is that what he is to you?
He is as close to a father without being related to me as I can get. You know, this is a man that I met and he's seen potential in me. He encouraged me to work on that potential. When other people and friends were up to mad antics, he told me to leave it alone and stay in the gym and stay away from certain people. He's changed not just my life, he's changed a lot of people's lives for the better. And, you know, he's more of a person that guides people. You know, he just helps people get on the right path. And just selfless, you know. I think, I'd say 25 years, I think he spent at the boxing club training people for no money.
They earn no money.
Yeah, if anything, it cost him, you know. He used to take me up and down the country, and he was even, I think one of the biggest compliments I can give him is that once I'd started boxing for Great Britain and England, he had the ability to let me go and flourish. Whereas a lot of coaches I see, they want to hang on to their fighter because they were the one that brought him up, they were the one that trained him, they want the credit. Joycey wasn't in it for that. Joycey sort of, he got me to a certain level and realised, I can't tell. Well, I don't think he really, because he could have, but he sort of said, you know what, you're at this level now, I can't take it no further. There you go. Go, you know, go and express yourself, go and become an Olympian. And it's the biggest credit I can give to him, because he doesn't want for nothing still. He doesn't ask for nothing, but I'd love to give him back, you know, like little, I can't give him much, but the little things I can give him, you know, he's welcome to any of my fights. He's the first person I'm going to thank, you know, anytime we do something like this, just because without him and without his guidance, I'm not sure how my life would have turned out.
Yeah, I think that you don't need to worry. I imagine that you've given him the greatest gift in the world, and that is that you succeeded. Like, that's all, because that's ultimately all he wanted, was for you to be the best you can be and to succeed at the things and be happy and healthy and have a successful life and career. Like, that's what he wanted. That's the gift for him. And certainly if the people who run, like you say, these people don't make money, from the people I know who do this in, like I say, there's 4 or 5 in my constituency, and they're always in the poorest areas. They're always working with the kids that no one else can wrangle. They are often putting their own money into like the building, the all the stuff that the young boys and girls do. Like, it's all them. Like, and they must, what must drive them is just seeing those kids come out the other side. That's the greatest gift in the world. It's all, you know, that must be. And so you've given him a gift already. You've given it back.
I'd like to think so. You know, of course, like I said, until my last day, this guy will always be, to me, I know so many boxers. I know so many people in boxing. This is the biggest superstar and the biggest legend I've ever met. So, you know, and I've met a lot of them, but for me, this guy is the one. You know, he's helped me change my life. He's helped numerous, like you say, kids that come from nothing change their life. And he's not. Some of them he's failed with. You know, some of them have gone down the wrong path. But the majority of them, you know, if he didn't give us anything, he'd give us good morals.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, also just a space for people. I mean, nowadays, certainly almost all of your life, like, there just is not really anywhere for young people to go and vent and be themselves and have people. So that those places, they are, and often to outsiders, a boxing gym can seem like a bit of a frightening place, I think, to outsiders. I remember the first time I ever went in to one of my local ones was after a local lad who'd gone there had been killed. He'd been stabbed and he died. They were raising money to help create this thing that would stop people dying from very serious stab wounds, like bleed control kits. Yeah. And they asked me to go along, and I went along, and it is in no way frightening at all. It's no, you know, like, it's like, that they're just like big-hearted, community-minded, lovely people who speak as they find, which is a good thing.
Yeah. I think it broadens people's horizons, because it definitely did mine. You know, it was the first place I went where I met English people, Indians, Pakistanis, travellers, Romanians, Polish, whatever. But as soon as you go through the door of that club, it doesn't matter where you're from, what black, white, green or blue, you go in that club, you're treated the same. You can be the biggest superstar in the club. You can be the new beginner. You're a blank canvas.
Yeah. I mean, I think that they're sort of vital places for this, but they are so threatened across our... I mean, there isn't a year that goes by that one of my boxing gyms isn't in my office telling me that their rent's been put up or they're going to be kicked turfed out. And, you know, I had one woman saying, I'm just going to get the kids in my back garden. I mean, there's nothing else for it. Like, I have to carry on. I mean, and it's like, God.
It's crazy because, you know, I don't know too much about politics or whatnot, but all I know is money well spent is money in boxing clubs. In fact, money well spent is money in any youth clubs, any sports clubs that will, you know, can help just give people activities, give people things to do. And let people know, you know, there's more to life than earning money, because essentially that's where all the crime comes from. Everyone just wants to earn a quick buck, and I get it, because we all want money, but money without life is pointless, you know.
Yeah, but you're absolutely right. Money well invested in those sorts of places is the taxpayer reaps it back 10 times over.
100%, you know. 100%.
They definitely need protecting. Also, the people who run them in my area, just an absolute hoot. They're the people you want to go for a beer with. They are an absolute bloody hoot.
Salt of the earth.
Indeed. Also, I just like people who speak as they find. And I find the boxing community in my area to be the kind of people who will tell you what they think straight to your face, which I quite like. I'd rather that than anything else. So how would you sign off a letter to Joycey? What would you say?
I'd say... Richie, but you're not blood related to me, but that doesn't mean nothing. I love you. I love your family. And thank you for giving me the wisdom and the basic lessons of boxing, which allowed me to go and grow and become the person I am today, the fighter I am today. And hopefully I can go and do the same to other people in the future. You are boxing. You are the epitome of boxing. And you've changed my life, you've changed a lot of young men's lives and women, and you're appreciated.
You say you don't know lots about politics. Well, I don't know a lot about boxing. I recently watched that. What I can only describe as, I felt it was a dreadful fight, but I was new to it. That one that was Eddie, you know, the world's strongest man one.
Yeah, yeah, that's not, that's the.
It was dreadful.
Listen, I've got a button. That's not boxing. That's not boxing. That's two guys in a pair of gloves, but that's not boxing.
Yeah, I have to say, because I don't watch a lot. I watch it at the Olympics and things. But I have to, like, because me and my family, we have obsessed with World's Strongest Man. I love it. Mm-hmm. And so we made like a big event of getting together and watching it.
Eddie Hall.
It's like a big event. Yeah, yeah. We all got like snacks and drinks, and the kids all sat round in the neighbourhood. And so, you know, we made a big event at it. And I just thought, I think I could do what they were doing. I was just like, this is dreadful.
You know what? I think I commend them for both for putting in the work and doing the training. But to brandish that boxing, it's an insult to boxing.
Yeah, it was just like, even I don't know anything about boxing, and I was like, you know, why aren't they doing this? Why aren't they doing that? And it's like, if I don't know anything about it, and I'm able to be a reasonable critique and commentator on this, something's gone wrong here.
Yeah, that's a money maker.
Yeah, it is. I bet they made some absolute cash money, which, you know, fair enough. People like me are going to tune into it. Fair enough.
I don't begrudge anyone making a few quid, but I'll not have you, a non-boxing person, calling that boxing.
Okay, all right. I agree. It was awful. I was like, what is brilliant is watching those people pick up Atlas stones and pulling trucks. Yeah. That's what they're good for, and they're very good at that.
Stay in your lane.
Yes, stay in your lane. Pick up Atlas balls, toss like things over, you know.
Eat a lot of calories, scream, lift things, but leave the fight to people that can fight, you know.
So what is the, you know, so you've gone professional. What does that mean now then? So it means...
I sort of got to the top of the tree as an amateur. You know, the Olympics is the pinnacle. Got my bronze medal, which it was gold, but it wasn't to be. So now it's like back down the food chain. You're starting at the bottom as a professional. You got to make your way up. I've had one fight and then I got injured. I'm now just getting ready, training for my second fight at the end of July. And, you know, the journey continues and we'll enjoy it, you know. That's the first and foremost. If we're doing this and we're not happy doing it, then it's no good. We're here and we love what we do. The difficulties and everything else, the rewards it brings, the joy it brings. But it's most of all, I stop smiling when I'm doing it, is the second I'll hand the gloves up.
Yeah. So the very, very best of luck to you. And thank you so much for sharing your brilliant people. They all sound immensely brilliant.
I appreciate it. Thank you very much.
No worries. Thank you so much for listening to this episode of Yours Sincerely with Jess Phillips. If you want to hear more conversations just like this, make sure you follow Yours Sincerely with Jess Phillips on the podcast provider of your choice. And why not write a letter to your friends telling them all about this podcast? You could also follow us on social media. We're at Jess Phillips Pod. Goodbye.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
Hey, I'm Guy Raz, and on my show, Wisdom from the Top, I talk with CEOs and business leaders about the toughest challenges of their careers.
There's lots of ways to measure success.
Sometimes a company has to bet against itself.
We wanted to set ourselves apart by having a point of view.
Businesses really impact people's lives in pretty fundamental ways.
On Wisdom from the Top, some of the greatest business leaders of our time share their intimate stories of leadership, innovation, and transformation. Stories you won't hear anywhere else. Check out Wisdom from the Top only on Luminary. Now, back to your show.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.